Hello and welcome. As always, even though that music is from Two Guys Gaming, this is One Guy Reading. Whether you're a mentor or not, you've found Noob's Book Club. I'm Sean, noob of all trades from Two Generations Gaming, and in this series, I am reading and reacting to The Poppy War, the novel by R.F. Kuang. I only have two episodes left for this book because over the Cape vacation, as I said, I read the rest of the book and I took notes for the last two episodes. And then next week, I will start the next Dragonlance book for the latest series in that world. I paused briefly there because I was going to say the name of the book, but now I can't remember what the name of the book is. It's like Dragons of Destiny or something like that. I don't know. Whatever. But I will do that one next week, and that will go through the remainder of August and all of September. And then in October, I will do Mary Shelley's Frankenstein for Spooktober. In this episode, episode 5, I'm going to do the end of part 2 and the first chapter of part 3. I will read the summary from Super Summary. Once again, Super Summary. Thank you for that. If you want access to the full summary, you'll have to get a subscription. That's not me selling it necessarily because I am in no way beholden to Super Summary. They're not a partner or anything like that. I'm simply saying if you want the entire thing, you have to pay for it. It's like $8 or something like that per month. Now for the summary from supersummary.com. You can find the link in the show notes. Part 2, Chapter 17. Rin is astounded Nisha has healed so well, since his previous prognosis was paraplegia. She notices that War stripped away his pretensions and wondered why they didn't become friends sooner. Enki arrives and Nisha leaves. Enki asks why Rin didn't tell him Nisha is a shaman. When she appears incredulous, Enki questions Nisha's miraculous healing process. Rin brushes off the comment and goes to Altan's office. Altan accuses her of spending too much time with Nisha. He grows frustrated that Rin cannot call the Phoenix and grabs her so tightly he leaves bruises on her collarbones. After this altercation, Rin, crying, meets Nisha again. Nisha accuses Altan of hurting her, and Rin points out that Nisha tormented her at Synegard. Nisha admits that he feared Rin in school and apologizes for his behavior. Rin turns away, and he leaves in frustration. On night watch, Rin hears shouting. A civilian says they are fleeing from a Kime. Rin remembers the beast from an arcane bestiary and volunteers to kill it. Nisha accompanies her. As they move against the flow of the crowd, Rin tells Nisha what she knows. Kime collects faces and can imitate anyone. They see dozens of civilians and Muganese soldiers with their faces gnawed off. They hear crying and find a terrified child. After Nisha comforts her and speaks to her, the girl transforms into a long-limbed beast. The Kame enchants them both, showing Rin Kisigi's face. With difficulty, she and Nisha shake off the spell. The Kame tosses Nisha against a building, then morphs into Altan. Rin beats it to death with a torch, feeling like she is killing Altan. When Nisha wakes, he says the Kame appear to him as his deceased younger brother. Nisha earnestly apologizes for insulting Altan, and Rin forgives him. When she reports to Altan, Rin cannot look at him. She does not tell him that the Kame appeared to her in his guise. Part 2, Chapter 18. The siege is several months in, and Coeur d'Alene is on the edge of falling. Kara's brother, Chagan, arrives. At dinner, Baji tells Rin how Chagan and Kara's power works. They are anchor twins who feel each other's pain and cannot live if the other dies. When Chagan arrives at dinner, he tells Rin he is a seer and he can help recall the Phoenix. Rin is frustrated. Altan told Chagan about her and insults Altan. Chagan tells the rest of the Tzika to leave. Once they're alone, he threatens to kill Rin if she speaks that way about Altan again. Rin doesn't want to admit that Altan's behavior is scaring her. Chagan says that Altan is cracking under the pressure of being commander. Part 2, Chapter 19. Nisha and Rin's divisions attempt to retake ground on the wharf. A green-yellow fog overtakes the blockade. People drop, twitching and grasping at their throats as the fog overtakes them. Rin watches in horror as Nisha is overtaken by the fog. Federation soldiers in gas masks advance, and Rin rushes into the gas to save Nisha. Altan grabs Rin and hits her solar plexus, paralyzing her. Someone carries Rin away. She watches helplessly as the Federation takes Nisha. The militia hosts an emergency meeting and decide to evacuate the city. Rin learns that Altan used a gas mask to capture a Federation soldier. She is furious that he let Nisha be taken and openly defies him. When the meeting disperses, Altan forbids Rin from talking back to him. When she doesn't back down, he strikes her across the face. Overtaken by rage, Rin connects to the Phoenix. They both summon flames, but Altan's overpower Rin's. Rather than being angry, Altan is pleased. Part 2, Chapter 20. Rin seeks Chagan's help with the spirit of the woman. Chagan guides her to the Pantheon. She knows the woman is Tiarza and asks her why she isn't imprisoned in Chulukorik. She says, "I am a Spearly. My ashes are free." Chagan seems perturbed, but banishes the woman. He takes Rin to a safe place in the spirit world, the Divinatory, where a goddess called the Talwu casts hexagrams to read the future. Rin asks what the phoenix wants her to know. As the hexagrams are read, Chagan becomes upset. When they return to the material world, they go to Altan immediately. Chagan tells Altan that the hexagrams indicate the Federation will attack Golanis, the wartime capital. The trio visit the Muganese soldier Altan captured, and he says the assault at Coeur d'Alene is a distraction so the Federation can take Golanis. Part 3, Chapter 21. Aracha ferries the Tsika up the Golan River. After a week, the river turns bloody. They get out and run to the city. The countryside has been razed. Inside the walls, quote, Golanis, a city of corpses, end quote, piled in neat pyramids and stacked against walls. Further into the city are mutilated corpses, displayed in increasingly grotesque ways. Altan orders the Sike to spread out and find survivors. Rin desperately looks for Kate, screaming his name. Finally, she hears a faint response. Hours later, she sits with Kate, who survived by hiding under the corpses of slain comrades. Kate debriefs the Sika about the massacre. Federation came at night, flayed Irja, and displayed his body publicly. Daji fled the city, and the militia surrendered, hoping for mercy. The Federation harvested the city's resources and massacred the citizens, using a combination of deadly gas and brutal murders. Among the other survivors is Venka, who was kept alive in a quote-unquote relaxation house. When Rin visits her, Venka says she was continuously sexually assaulted. She tells Rin not to pity her, but to avenge her. Rin runs to find Altan, hoping for advice. She finds him in a makeshift opium den. How's that for ending on a cliffhanger there, huh? We'll get to that in the next episode. Thank you again to Super Summary for that, well, summary. Now for my initial thoughts. Honestly, right now, my thoughts are dominated by the abject horror that I will discuss in the quote-unquote liked least section. If I thought war was awful and dehumanizing before, well, I was blind. Now I see, and I wish I couldn't. But I will try to compose myself and get my thoughts on everything else, because I need to process and build up to it, and recover enough to come up with a liked best. Oof. This episode is going to be a tough one. Please be patient. Nija comes back into our lives a changed man. Rin, still traumatized by his abuse and unable to process it due to the war, initially falls into old habits. Eventually he convinces her and even shows some vulnerability himself. They forge an unsteady alliance and eventually a tentative friendship. I know that people change. You hear the saying enough that it's become cliche. But there's always the lingering thought of, have they really changed? Because deep down, people favor the familiar. Change, as I said a couple episodes ago, takes time and effort. And too often, it's very easily undone. So I'm glad to see that they put things behind them for now, at least. One of the events that helps this process is that they work together to fight Ekime. It chews the faces off corpses to fuel shape-shifting power. Rin convinces Altan, due to her study of lore under Zhang, to allow her to fight the thing. Then, she brings Nija along with her. I said how well they worked together and complimented each other. I'm glad they got one more chance to prove that. One last chance? Most likely, but we wrote off Nija once before. Maybe he surprises us again. Expect the unexpected in this book. And not always in a good way. But more on that later. If this is the last we've got of Nija, he suffered an inglorious end. I know not everyone gets a hero's goodbye, but that's especially heart and gut-wrenching. Especially since Rin tried to save him, and Altan violently prevented her. He then later revealed that he went into the shit to get a prisoner of war. Undeniably the best of two terrible options, and proven so later. Still, cold-hearted. I want to talk some about the scene with the Kume. I already discussed the monster's power, which somehow ends up being one of the least horrifying parts of the section. Even when Kwong graphically describes the after effects, I still read it with dispassionate detachment. I think the fairy tale nature of the beast made it less real, and I processed it as such. I mean, eating faces off corpses is pretty gruesome, but the rest of this section, especially the last two chapters, potentially scarred me for life. I just said to Christine, This book is very graphic and it's the depiction of war. She didn't ask me to elaborate. So, until I write the section later to reckon with it all, I just have to live with it. And you have to live with me dancing around it for the next 8 to 10 minutes or so. So, that monster. I don't know if Kwong telegraphed it too much. Maybe my radar went off because I've seen so many scenes play out this way. Maybe a little bit of both. I want to give myself credit for my prognosticating skills, though. I'm just bummed that I couldn't relay it in real time. You just have to trust that I am telling the truth, that I knew what was going on from the beginning. As Rin and Nisha search the area for the monster, they see evidence of its attacks. Okay, either this thing is real, or someone is Scooby-Dooing the attacks to scare off superstitious folk. And somebody's mowing the lawn in the back, so I will try to overcome that. At this point, it's about 50-50. The whole time, Kwong keeps emphasizing that with thousands of faces at its disposal, it can make itself look like literally anyone. That causes me to lean towards the thing being real. But at this point, I start to think that they stumble on someone mimicking the monster, who themselves get attacked and killed by the real thing. Instead, they stumbled on a little girl, hiding out in the midst of everything. Immediately, that triggers my suspicion. It's too convenient, right? But Kwong, to her credit, plays it cool for a bit. Plus, neither of them suspect the little girl at all initially. I still can't shake the feeling that something is very wrong. Then, finally, it happens. When telling its story, the little girl, parenthetically monster, slips up and they catch an inconsistency. A battle ensues in which the monster tortures the both of them with faces and guilt from the past. Eventually, they find the weakness and defeat it. Aside from an epic battle, the scene revealed to Rin that Nisha knew how to act around and care for the little girl. He reveals that he has a little sister. That goes a long way to humanizing him in Rin's eyes. An excellent bit of writing that I enjoyed. Maybe I need to remember this for quote-unquote liked best. Because right now, the pickings are slim for that section, this time around. But that gives me an idea. Speaking of Grimm, let's talk a little bit about Altan. Kwong makes it difficult for us to form an opinion of him. Rin takes him on as a mentor. At first, he seems open to the arrangement. Soon, he shifts to quote-unquote tough love. And finally, outright disdain when she fails to live up to his expectations. Then, just as we want to hate him for his attitude and behavior, Chagan shows up. Being the closest to Altan, he explains to Rin that Altan was thrust into leadership role, perhaps earlier than he ever should have been. Furthermore, due to his spearly heritage and fighting prowess, they only ever treated him as a living weapon. He never got a chance to live, and only knows violence in his life. Furthermore, his prowess fueled him as well. Because he fought better than anyone else, he never knew defeat. So the losses inflicted on him in the war affect him very deeply. And he had to come to terms with those losses while simultaneously incurring more and more devastating ones. So a measure of understanding forms for the young man. Sure, he's abrasive and at times abusive, but we know why. While I don't forgive him for it, I feel for the guy and I want him to figure it out. Then he absolutely loses his shit, pulls rank on Rin, and comes close to killing her. She responds by summoning fire. He explains it under the guise that he planned it that way, but I seriously doubt it. I think he went haywire, she stood up to him, he snapped back to reality, and tried to write off his bad behavior. I know guys like him. I've worked for guys like him. They get a little taste of power and become the epitome of quote-unquote power corrupts. Everything is their means to an end. Only results matter. No matter how many eggs you break, at least there's an omelet at the end. I have no respect for that type of quote-unquote leadership. As you might expect, that's got me into trouble. The machine has no use for cogs that won't cog. I don't care. I'm done pretending any of this makes sense. And fuck Altan, or so I thought. Right as I say that, Rin makes a connection between the current war crimes and an event in his past, and I find myself sympathizing yet again. Look, I understand that people are complicated. They lead complex lives and experience a wide variety of events that go into making them who they are. Rarely do you get characters like that in fantasy novels, though. At least I don't see or recognize them very often. Even the more complex and enjoyable characters, like Old Raistlin, still fit nicely into quote-unquote good or quote-unquote evil boxes. Not so for our old friend Altan. Ever the optimist, I hope for quote-unquote good. One person who allows us to get to know Altan better is Chagan. He returns from his recon mission. When he does, Kara feels his presence. She is clearly in pain in response. At this point, I start to think two possibilities. The first, they inflict psychic damage on one another for some reason or another. Perhaps it's part of their curse. They share a psychic bond, but suffer severe feedback loops after being apart for too long. Maybe he simply delights in hurting his sister. some sort of sadistic kick for him. Hey sis, I'm home. Don't forget who's boss. Funny how I immediately jumped to that as a possibility. I spent the entire book trying to find the positive in people. Then this guy shows up and I immediately jump to the conclusion that he's torturing his sister, either playfully or maliciously. First, how do you torture someone playfully? I know I'm old and standards change, but clearly you've never had siblings. My brothers and I tortured each other often. Looking back now, perhaps there was a malevolence behind that treatment. At the time, though, it felt fun and playful. Perhaps that's why people are so quick to normalize and accept all forms of violence against them. Because we trained them from an early age. Like, what's the point of sibling rivalry? Why fight for the attention and love of your parents? Some who misinterpret Darwinism say that it bestows evolutionary advantage. Not true. The quote-unquote strongest... You know what? Fuck it. I'm not mansplaining. If you don't get it by now, you never will. Same with Alpha Beta Sigma bullshit. Then you get into toxic corporate culture. They spit bullshit about being a family. So who are your coworkers? Siblings. And it triggers that response. For what? I've never understood why you tear down those who volunteer to help you. To favor the strong over the weak? But what if those strong are not smart, or flexible or adaptable, or even really the strongest? What if they were only really strong over a short period of time and the ones you cut out turned out to be the strongest? Then what? Okay, guilty. I don't mind mansplaining to the bros, but I went off on a rant there. Back to the twins. The other thought was more mundane. The twins were linked, but simply in the usual creepy twin way. The Corsican brothers, you hurt one and the other feels pain. Since he returned injured, she felt the pain when he came back. Turns out this time Kwong went with the mundane option. So M. Night Shyamalan is in the news again. I presume for making the exact same terrible movie with a predictable twist at the end. I say this because I was just about to say that not everything needs to be an M. Night Shyamalan movie in response to Kwong being a bit too obvious in this section. Then I submarined that with the intro. I just can't help myself. I like The Sixth Sense. I tolerated Signs and Unbreakable, and recently watched the other two films, Split and Glass. Other than that, I either skipped, parenthetically, or absolutely hated, in parenthetical, all of his other movies. I think that trend continues this time. Also, I'm pretty sure he helped usher in the ridiculous, quote-unquote, no-spoiler culture. Again, back to the book. Ultimately, I think she went obvious because she knew that the next few chapters were truly horrifying, maybe protecting our fragile psyches from breaking too much. If so, I, for one, appreciate her concern and care, because my brain could not handle that much. It already continues to spin, simply from the end of this section. One thing that surprised me some was that Shogun is much more powerful than Alton, and still only second in command. I say some because history is littered with better, parenthetically, smarter, more thoughtful, gentler, and parenthetical, men who take orders from lesser men. But when they explain that Alton beat the shit out of them, well, even the freaks submit to some trash toxic version of masculinity. Having grown up a freak and become a patron for freaks, I never submitted to the bullshit social hierarchies. I still don't. I guess if I cared enough to play the game, then I might. So on that level, it makes sense. Also, I shit on America, but for now at least, we have the choice without fear of death. Not so for these misfits. Speaking of the misfits, Aracha, parenthetically, the water guy that I recently denigrated as a puddle in a bucket, and parenthetical, showed his usefulness. When they needed to get to Golan Nis quickly, he manipulated the current around them. Alas, they still arrived too late. But I wanted to give credit when due. My final point ties in with what I just discussed with Shogun and Alton. Rin says something along the lines of they respect Alton and fear Shogun. So things make more sense. Fear is a great motivator in the short term, but it's not sustainable. Eventually, as people get over their fear, what's left? Loyalty, on the other hand, is earned over time. It is based on respect and therefore much more sustainable. So even though Alton became the leader through Braun, he also must back it up with some measure of intelligence or wisdom. As a result, I respect him more. Someone who knows when to wield the hammer and when to apply intelligence gets my vote every time. Keeping score. I take some credit for being correct about Nisha. Granted, I covered nearly every possibility that I could think of when discussing he and Rin. He came back, parenthetically, something I wasn't 100% sure about, and parenthetical, and they eventually settled into a genuine friendship. I thought maybe Rin goes to visit him, and they reconcile. Kwong's version, even if it requires some suspension of disbelief, works much better. We got to see the respect grow through the professional relationship that then changes their personal relationship. I was completely wrong about Alton, though. Well, not completely, but wrong enough. She tried to work with him as a mentee capacity. Initially, it looked like he might actually accommodate her. Then she failed, parenthetically in his eyes, and parenthetical, and he became more involved with the war effort. She fell by the wayside until Chagan showed up. He guided her to the Pantheon of the Gods at her request. Altan again pulls the fire from her, but she wants control. More on that in a bit. Zhang remains gone, but he is still on her mind. She sees similarities between Chagan and Zhang. She's obviously looking for someone to take Zhang's place. Unfortunately, nobody can fill his shoes. That might end poorly for all involved if he doesn't show up soon. Hell, even if he does, she's already on the path. It might already be too far gone. But I'm getting ahead of myself. What comes next? I want to start with something that just occurred to me. It might be obvious, but I've proven myself a bit slow to draw conclusions every now and then. Sometimes, parenthetically. I hesitate to say most times, and parenthetical. I can figure things out. A few times, though, she took me by surprise. So I want to get ahead of this one in case it comes true. If you've already figured it out, just bear with me. Rin's god is different from Altan's god. Both have dominion over fire, obviously, but Rin's demands more, and maybe offers more power. Her inability to call that power has nothing to do with her incompetence. Okay, not nothing. At least it offers an alternate, parenthetically, and less humiliating, in parenthetical, explanation. Well, I can stop talking about Nisha, right? Since Altan left him for dead and took the prisoner of war instead. Wait, what's that you say? If that's true, then they could have taken Nisha prisoner. Probably, but A, they don't seem like the prisoner type, and B, what strategic advantage does he give them? The guy has proven resilient, and I want him to live. Unfortunately, I just don't see that happening. War is hell. Nisha needed to die an unceremonious death to drive that point home. Rest in peace, young man. On the other hand, I doubt we've seen the last of Zhang. As I just said, I think he needs a return to give Rin an anchor in reality so her god does not consume her. She can't do it alone. Altan is an unreliable teacher with too much on his plate anyway. Chagan may remind her of Zhang. However, he lacks Zhang's age and wisdom. He still believes on some level to might makes right. Granted, given the massacre at Golden Knees, they need might. And perhaps that might is a fire that burns everything to ash, allowing for a rebirth. But what is reborn from that ash? Even if he somehow misses the carnage, he can help with the rebirth. His caution will be a welcome contrast to the recklessness of whoever remains. Already, we see a helplessness in one side that may inevitably lead to a thirst for revenge. This in response to a bloodlust that seems to know no bounds right now. Please come back, Zhang. On the other hand, as far as the Sika, I think they're done. Yes, they are powerful shaman with direct connections to the gods. However, the Federation massacred an entire city. Unless they find a place to hide and regroup, an army of less than a dozen stands no chance against that might and raw violence. If I'm right and they don't survive, I hope that both Nisha and Zhang come back. Because now more than ever, I'm afraid that Rin will break bad. Everything that she works and fights for ends up twisted or otherwise broken. A person can only take so much. Especially one that came from nothing and keeps seeing the promise of the power to change everything. Yes, not necessarily in a good way, but that's why we need Zhang, at least, and maybe even Nisha. Zhang, as I wrote, can be the counter to her rash bloodlust, parenthetically, as I see happening. She won't allow him to, initially. However, whatever resistance rises up to her madness, he needs to be a part of it. Nisha, too, a voice from her past, and one she's come to trust, should be there, too. I haven't even mentioned Kate. Right now, he seems too broken by bearing witness to the violence in the city. However, he could also be that voice in case Nisha really is dead. Enough for what I liked least. Speaking of that violence, I've stalled long enough. Time to finally talk about all that happened in Gula Knees. Thankfully, she spares us the actual scenes of violence. Or not. One thing I learned in freshman English was that often the best thing to do is leave it to the reader's imaginations, because they often come up with things far worse, parenthetically, or certainly more personal and parenthetical, than you ever could write. Maybe that's why it bothered me so much. I consider myself a peace-loving hippie, but I have a dark side. I imagine everyone does. That dude who cut you off in traffic on your way to work this morning? Take that road rage, add in that you don't want to be commuting to that godforsaken job in the first place, multiply it by waking up late, and what do you imagine happening to that guy? More personally, when I go grocery shopping lately, I have the overwhelming urge to ask everyone to leave the store. This one isn't their fault, and they deserve long and happy lives. Once they're out, I set fire to the store and sit in the parking lot, my face aglow with the evidence of my handiwork. Maybe roast a hot dog over the smolting embers. So yeah, we are all capable of some violence. Because remember when I said that a monster eating the faces of corpses was tame by comparison? Buckle up. It all starts innocently enough. The Tzika learn that the town they defended ends up simply being a distraction. The actual attack is planned for Golden Knees. Once they verify that information, they race to defend what's left of the city. As I wrote earlier, Aracha gets his moment as a hero by manipulating the currents of the river to get them there faster. I only mention it again because this is where the horrors start. Good God, they gave a warning. This is when we needed it. First, the river flows with blood. Then they find the river dammed with corpses. They must continue to the city on foot. At this point, I still hoped, parenthetically, and maybe they did as well, in parenthetical, that something still remained of the city to defend. That hope is dashed as soon as they get the gates of the city open. They bear witness to a massacre, a quote-unquote cleansing, parenthetical. Think how fucked up it is that we use that term in such a manner, in parenthetical. More accurately, spares no one. Civilians, military, nobles. Only the Empress escapes under the cover of darkness. People are shocked by her cowardice. In times like these, I quote System of a Down, why don't presidents fight the war? Why do we always send the poor? The short answer is that the elites see the poor as expendable. This isn't the time for the long answer. The city, as far as they can tell, is all corpses. Corpses dismembered via beheading. Corpses stacked in piles. Some burned. Some just left to the scavengers. I use the wording stacked because they meticulously, intentionally stacked them instead of simply piling them. They had the psychotic idea and the time to leave them in neat, symmetrical stacks for whoever found them. As they split up to the gruesome, parenthetically, and likely futile, in parenthetical, task of searching for survivors, they see more of the same and even worse. An entire city's population killed and desecrated. As an added insult, they left the other animals alive. The dogs fed on the corpses and became feral and aggressive. Utterly defeated themselves by the brutal scenes and their inability to find any survivors, they finally stumble on some. I already mentioned that Katei lives. He tells them about how things transpired in the massacre. One of the reasons for the one-sidedness of the battle was the infighting. Irja tried to unite them to no avail. The Federation flayed Irja and displayed his corpse for them to see. It broke the will of the soldiers. The Federation waltzed in and made a game of it. How many can they behead? When that took too long, they simply released the gas. Golanese never stood a chance against such brutality. War favors the dead. Is that a saying? It should be. Katei also tells of other survivors. Vinka was taken away to a quote-unquote relaxation room. I grimly knew exactly what that meant. A room for soldiers to beat and rape women in between shifts of killing and maiming. The story about the pregnant woman tops all of this gruesome event and gives you more to ponder on the absolute atrocities that we are capable of. You know why this all bothers me so much? I mean, if you can muster it, you can give me a duh. But, I mean, in context of the face-eating monster. Both gruesome. But one an entertaining story, and the other keeps me up at night pondering the horror. The answer, one simple phrase, quote, parallels with modern Chinese history, end quote. These things happen. Evidence exists that people, real people, do these things to other people. Maybe not on this scale, but possibly. Having gone to the former concentration camps while in Germany, I read stories like this and countless others. Humans are capable of the most atrocious acts against one another, and it continues to this day. To what end? God? Country? Simply the fact that you've somehow convinced yourself that you're genetically superior? What the fuck? I simply can't fathom that. Maybe I'm not supposed to, but as someone who wants to understand things, this creates a disconnect. On some level, we feel right on the cusp of something just as awful. Far-right politics are on the rise all over the world. Language like vermin and tainted are being said out loud about fellow humans. How do we fight against that and ensure that never again is a promise that we keep? I know, you want to believe in the inherent good of most humans, and that they will listen to those instincts. I mean, we all know and are horrified by the atrocities of the past. Are we horrified, though? If so, why do they keep happening? Hell, I just talked about the word cleansing as a process to wipe out an entire group of people. And so, when again reminded of the potential, parenthetically, I want to say evil here, but it feels inadequate, in parenthetical, inhumanity of humans. It puts me into a dark place. Having been in a dark place before, I don't want to spend much time there, but I know if I want a hope of understanding, I at least need to visit. So R.F. Kuang, thank you again for reminding me. Now for what I liked best. I wrote earlier that coming up with something that I liked about this section might be a stretch, but as I wrote and thought, I came up with something. I need to go broad this time. Nothing about this section is good or should be liked, even when we're not in the middle of a city full of corpses. Altan repeatedly abuses everyone around him. Yes, Nisha and Rin reconciled. However, that's a dim light and the creeping darkness, and is quickly extinguished when Niza is presumed dead. So instead of burying what little faith I have left in humanity, I choose to pray R.F. Kuang's writing. First, she writes the massacre scenes with such brutality. Initially, it shocked me into an abject state of terror. Then, she gives that brutality a human face. And you sympathize and empathize with the survivors to such a degree that you feel their pain. So when Venka says to burn them all, you agree on some level, no matter how peace-loving you may be. Furthermore, even though she doesn't spare the details, she also doesn't go overboard. Whenever Game of Thrones or Walking Dead, one of those shows, veers off into self-parody, they ratchet up the ultra-violence with no purpose. They're simply trying to shock a desensitized audience and have nothing left to abuse their characters, and by extent, the audience itself. The violence in this book serves a purpose. I already talked about it. It reminds us again the horrific nature of humans sometimes. The one thing missing, as usual, is an explanation. By way of one, they just say, quote, "That's the way the Federation are trained," end quote. And right with the quote-unquote only following orders of the Nazis, we have our explanation. When it comes to you or them, best take out them. It's truly frightening, because we all relate to that. And now for my final thoughts. The book is called The Poppy War. I shouldn't be shocked. Yet I was, and still am. I shudder to think what comes next. I already know that Ren breaks bad. Probably comes as a result of some or all of the Sika being slain in battle. I hope Zhang and Nisha both come back to balance the scales. However, knowing that there's two other books and the tone set in this one, all that happy crappy might need to wait. I'm preparing myself for one hell of a finish, but one that burns everything down and sets up for the dark before the dawn. I hope. I need some kind of silver lining out of this eventually. As always, thanks for listening. You can find us, if you haven't already, at www.twoguysgaming.net. We have articles. I just wrote an article about my trip to Newbery Comics. Today I'm going to write one about my video games of past to continue the celebration of the 10 years of Two Generations Gaming. And then I'm going to do one. I just went to That's Entertainment today. So I will talk about that in an article, most likely tomorrow. Chris is coming over this weekend. We might play Dungeons & Dragons. We might play Warhammer. We'll probably play Magic. So at some point I'll put an article up about that, about the two guys gaming, actually getting together and playing some games. The Instagram has been more active. The YouTube has not. I'm going to work on getting that up and running by next month so that I can finish out strong September, October, November, December, and then continue that into the next year. I will be back with the next episode of this series in a couple of days. Maybe tomorrow, maybe Saturday, maybe Sunday. We'll see. And that will finish up the Poppy War. And then I can start the next Dragonlance book. Check out the new schedule on the show notes. I will talk to you again in a couple of days. Bye, guys.